Entrepreneur Weekly interviews the brilliant leaders of today in order to provide a stepping stone of wisdom on the journey to personal business ownership. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
Once again today in Las Vegas, I'm still at the Oracle NetSuite Suite World Convention, and I've been told by the folks that I need to meet this guy named Tony Drockton. He owns a company called Hammett. Women's handbags, SoCal company. They make handbags and accessories. And I understand, Tony, that you are a fun guy, so bring on the fun, brother.
Well, I'm glad all those payoffs worked out, Alan. So here I am. Earned this seat every dollar.
There you go. Well, so tell us about your journey, because everybody's like talking about you. You're wearing this wild-looking jacket that I'm envious of.
Oh, thank you. Lots
of flowers and things on it. And I'm not describing it well at all, but let's just say I like it. But, I mean, how does a man get into women's handbags and accessories in this world today?
Well, first of all, you just got to jump in. Classic entrepreneur. I saw an opportunity to do something different. Don't come from the industry. And 10 years ago, a woman named Stephanie Hammett asked me to help her build the brand. I jumped right in, thought it would be easy. About 2 years in, whew, it's not easy. But you know what? As any entrepreneur, a couple of pivots, and here we are today, 10 years. Proud that we're actually carried in 800 locations around the country.
Wow. Now, what happened to Hammett? The Hammett part of this story.
She's buried. So.
Oh, nice. Nice.
No, come on. Stephanie Hammett, you know, she's a great part of our tradition. She gave me the basis of the designs. But just like, you know, a lot of great designers, I had to take it to the next level. So putting in the processes, adding on the people, layering in your partners to distribute, all of this blocking and tackling that most entrepreneurs don't like to do, including me. But I did it. Wore a lot of hats. But in the beginning, I figured out I can do this differently, you know. Especially, I think a lot of American brands, you know, in my opinion, are built, grow as fast as you can. Whatever revenue is revenue is revenue, and that's how you'll become great. And we focused on the European model. I said, there's some great brands out there that are hundreds of years old, at least 100 years old, Louis Vuitton, Chanel's, and I want to see what they've done to be around way past my lifetime. So took a lot longer to get here, but we really built the brand on what I call price integrity, product integrity, brand integrity. What you see is what you get. My dream is anytime two Hammett fans, which are the customers that wear our bags, meet, they share the same stories and the affinity for our product and for what we stand for. And most importantly, they have the same story.
So now, Stephanie Hammett, she's still around? She's still your partner?
She is. She's got ownership, but not daily operations.
Gotcha. She's like founder slash letting you do all the hard work.
She's kind of my Jimmy Choo, right?
Okay,
I don't know if
you
know, he stepped away the first year.
Yeah.
And it, you know, it took off forever.
Right,
so
right. No, that's cool.
I just texted her today. I said, man, you'd be so happy to be here.
That's cool. So what were you doing before this then?
you know, classic entrepreneur. After graduate school, I took the first opportunity I could make the most money. Did pretty well. I was in the roofing business. Got out of that.
How do you go from roofing to handbags? Oh, my gosh, right?
I like to build things.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, no, it is. It seems like a quantum leap, but, you know, born in Cleveland, Ohio, you know, motivated really for...
This could be the most bizarre transition, roofing to handbags.
It seems so natural, right?
That would like be like me going into the roofing business right now, you know. Wow.
Well, I had a straight road. I went from roofing into residential finance and development of real estate and then into handbags. So does that fit?
No. You know what, though? I'm looking at a piece of your, you know, product right here.
Right.
This may be a piece that is secret, you know, to the rest of the world.
But we're on radio.
But we're on radio, so they can't see it. And it's awesome. It's got that, you know, quality of, I don't know, I'd have to compare it to a brand. You'd probably go, don't say that brand.
No.
But it's a quality looking piece, and I look for that quality.
Yeah.
I remember when I was a kid, my dad used to go, we'd go fishing. My dad, there's five kids in my family. We'd go fishing, and my dad would try and fillet the fish when we would catch one with these knives that were like junk. And he'd be sharpening the knife, and he'd get so mad at the knife, he'd throw it in the water, and he'd pick up another one, he'd sharpen it, and he could never get a good fillet. And I said, Dad, why don't you buy a really good fillet knife? And he'd be like, oh, they're too expensive. But you get what you paid for. So, you know, when I grew up, the first knife I bought, the first time I went fishing and I was a man, I went out and I bought the most expensive good knife, and I never regret it. So when you want quality, you pay a little extra for it, but it pays you back 1,000 times.
You know, especially in roofing. Because it's going to leak.
Yeah, I got the 50-year roof, by the way, on my house, just
right,
so you know.
Right. I mean, in residential mortgage, I mean, if you get the wrong one, you're locked into something you can't get out of. And in a handbag, you wear it every day. Yeah. It's something you use. It's not just for fashion. The quality has to be there. It has to deliver on the promise. And the promise is you wear it for a lifetime.
All right, we're going to take a little break. We're going to come back, and Tony's going to talk to us about, you know, a little bit more about being an entrepreneur, some of the struggles he's had to going from roofing to handbags. I love this story. You're listening to Entrepreneur Weekly today at Oracle's NetSuite's Sweet World. It's a convention, and we're having a good time. Don't go anywhere.
Stay tuned. There's more Entrepreneur Weekly after these messages. You're listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
All right, we're back at the Sweet World Convention. It's put on by Oracle NetSuite. And one of the guests here, I'm actually in a studio put on by Blue Mic. And we know Blue Mic. We have a lot of them in our studios. They're great mics for those that care about audio equipment. Tony Drockton, Hammett. Does anybody out there know what Hammett is? It's a ladies' handbag and accessories company out of Southern California, where I hail from. And Tony, again, roofing to handbags. Now, the question is, you took over this company, at least the day-to-day workings of it, and you got yourself in how many different stores right now?
You know, we're just broke 800 points of distribution around the country with our wholesale retail partners, and our online business has tripled in the past year. So, you know, it's an exciting time.
So, I that brings me to probably why you're here, which is you have to, with that much distribution and, you know, working with the fact that you have an online sales component of it and the stores, and you really have to have something like NetSuite to be able to keep track of everything. So we'll get to that in a minute. But the bigger thing is fashion is such a difficult industry. I mean, it's so, I don't even know how, honest to God, I always felt like with fashion, you either buy your way in, or I don't know, is there any other way? And obviously, you know, you're going to tell me you didn't buy your way into this success, right?
Yeah, no, I definitely didn't.
So tell us, what did you do? Because fashion is everyone wants to be a fashion designer. Look how sexy you are, man. Come on.
Right, right. You know, it's funny. I mean, well, you know, classic entrepreneur, you know, made a lot of mistakes early on. I think the best advice I didn't listen to, and it was the fast buck, the quick earn, you know, the diffusion line, the knock yourself off, the dumb it down, the just get it to this price point. All of these great mentors that tried to teach me things that I didn't listen to. And I grasped on to a couple of people that gave me some great advice, which was focus on the long term. So far away you can't even see it. And at the same time, focus on the customer that's right in front of you. If you do the two of those points are gonna align, and one day, 10 years later, I'm sitting here with you.
Well, and obviously you've done something right, because here you are on Entrepreneur, but here you are being brought to the table by NetSuite and the folks at Oracle. My bigger question is, how do you know the difference between opinions and that good advice? You know, because there's a million opinions out there. How did you differentiate between the thousands and thousands of opinions you probably got from all your friends and your enemies too, because some of them didn't want you to succeed?
It's simple. What would the customer think? I always ask myself.
The KISS method.
What are the
keep it simple, stupid, right?
What does the customer think of me making a lower grade product and putting my name on it and selling it at a different store? What would the customer think if I didn't care what happens after they buy it? What would the customer think? What would the customer think? And every time I knew exactly where to go. Previous businesses, maybe not so much. Maybe I got a little more mature. This business, it's really easy. And by the way, the women customer that we're, you know, loved by, they're very discerning. They're very smart. I like to say that they're Wonder Woman right now. They've got all the power. They've got this lasso of truth. It's called the mobile phone. And you know what it does? It sees everything. It shares everything, and it tells them who's in integrity and who's not. And if you're not, that lasso of truth's gonna squeeze your brand and get rid of you, and they're gonna find someone else that can deliver what they're really looking for, which is somebody that they believe in, somebody they can be proud of, a handbag that they can wear every day that delivers on its promises, not before, not during, but way after they've made the purchase.
It's interesting to hear you say that. My wife bought a handbag the other day.
Was it mine?
No, honestly, I don't even know, but I noticed it. My wife is that discerning person.
Yeah.
Yeah. For me, a car is a personal conveyance of who I am.
Yeah.
I think for women, shoes, handbags, their attire, yeah. personal conveyance of who they are. They're really sending out messages with every accessory, every piece of jewelry, every piece of clothing they wear. Yeah. And so, I mean, for a man,
right? Yeah.
You also had another human being's name on it, Stephanie Amott.
Yeah.
Did that play into it also that you are not, it's not your name, it's her name? Just curious about that.
Yeah, I think there was two sides to it, right? The fact that, I'm not the founding designer, but really I was the CEO, the one to build the brand. I was able to back away from some of the design advice and really listen to it from our customers and implement it. Like functionality and versatility on the designer end is non-existent. We have a ton of it in our bags. They're just as functional as any other price point out there. And the other side of the coin is trying to convince a woman that I know what I'm doing in the women's handbag business. Well, I'm never going to win that. So I didn't. I surround myself with a great team. My designer right now, she was an intern. She's 5 years with us. She's designing great collections. My creative director. So I brought in people that could fill in those gaps. And I've stayed out in front of really representing the brand. Chief cheerleader. That's it.
Beautiful. We're going to take a little break. Come back with more of the story behind Hammett and its CEO, Tony Drockton. This is Entrepreneur Weekly, and he's going to give you some advice. Be right back.
You're listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
Once again, we're with Tony Drockton. He is the CEO of Hammett, women's handbags and accessories out of Southern California. And we're at an event in Las Vegas called Sweet World, put on by Oracle NetSuite. And what we didn't talk about before we let you be the professor for a moment, Tony, is, you're here at this event. And as you scaled to this, gigantic number of stores you're in and your online business, NetSuite, I mean, did it become a big tool for you?
Yeah, we launched with it almost from the beginning, 9 years ago. And I made sure as we added on either outside softwares or we improved what it could do, everything talked and worked together. Traditionally, everything was outside. We just sort of designed the bags. We had outside sales, outside fulfillment, operations, finance. As we brought it all in-house, including our own fulfillment center, having NetSuite as the kernel and being able to have everything else talk has created what today is almost a completely paperless company. We're completely in the cloud. I make sure our printer barely works at our brand new headquarters because I don't like when they print anything. Southern California environmentalists. So yeah, it's been the basis of our growth, and it's also allowed us to scale without adding too many people on the op side. Classic story, right?
Good stuff. Well, I wonder, why are you here? So you just told us why. All right, it's time for you to put your professor's cap on and leave us with some great advice from your, the collective soul of all the things you've had to endure, your relationship with Stephanie Hammett, and the good, the bad, the ugly of the mistakes and the wise moves you've made, and all those things, they boil down to a couple of drops of the most significant things of you, Tony, and Hammett. What do you got for us?
It's a lot there.
Yeah.
How long do I have,
you
Alan?
You got 2.5 minutes.
Two and a half minutes.
Okay, I'll give you four
the
minutes.
The crosswalk's counting down. I'm running.
Yeah, right.
Oh man.
So here, I'll give you one more. When somebody's thinking about pulling that parachute and going, I'm sick and tired of this life that I have working in a cubicle, and I want to. It's like, what do you say to that person?
Meaning, should they go be an entrepreneur?
Yeah.
No.
Wow!
No, it's not for everybody. As a matter of fact, it's only for the few. I mean, you've heard, I'm the last one to get paid as the owner of my company.
As am I.
And every great successful entrepreneur will tell you of the past failures that got them there. So if you're safe in a cubicle and you've never had a failure, if you've never missed a paycheck, it's not time. I can promise you that. But maybe you can be an entrepreneur. So within the company, you can practice the skill set, find a few mentors, and if you're able to take some risks in the company and have some wins and survive those defeats, then maybe you're ready to take the first leap. And only then, I would say, go to work for an entrepreneur. That's the next step. And if you can work with an entrepreneur and you can embrace his foibles and probably his craziness and a little bit of chaos, and you can say, this is the lifestyle that I'm ready to lead, then maybe you're for the next step. This is the safe path for anybody that's in a cubicle.
That is a heavy thing you just said, bro. You said that to entrepreneur.
I know.
I mean, it's I like, he's like, I know. Oh, crap. Yeah. It's, you know. No, but I'm going to agree with you, because most people think, I'll just pull this ripcord, right, and there's a big, beautiful golden parachute going to float me to Earth. No, it ain't going to open. It's going to pull you out of your chair, and then you better build an airplane, right, on the way down.
And a great
out of your pants and shoes and underwear.
And none of us have a second chute. That's we're entrepreneurs.
Right. That's right.
There better be a trampoline on the bottom, because I'm bouncing and going right back up.
That's right.
And if there's no trampoline, let's hope that I'm made of rubber.
And sometimes you got to be.
You have to be.
Yeah.
You have to be made of rubber, and you have to have passion. And the passion can't, I promise you, if it's only about money, that passion dies quickly the first time you make a lot of it, because you'll spend it all.
Yeah. I went to Europe one time. I have four kids, and I had a $20 bill. One credit card that was like maxed out, and I was being taken by a car company to experience something in the Amazon jungle. I was actually in the Amazon jungle, not even Europe,
wow,
to the Amazon. And I got there, and there was nobody there to pick me up. And I'm like, oh my God.
Right.
So I knew the address of the hotel, and it cost, I said to the taxi driver, how much is it going to cost to get to this hotel? And he basically told me about $15. So I'm like, all right, I'll get to the hotel. I got to the hotel, nobody there. My name was not on the, I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, I'm in the Amazon jungle, and I've got four kids at home. I got $5 left. You know what? I sat there in that hotel. It was the middle of the night at home, so I couldn't even call my wife and tell her. I sat there, and I thought to myself, what the hell am I going to do? Here I am in this place, right? And all of a sudden, I heard somebody say my name. But they were saying it to somebody else. And it was another language, because it was, you know, it was German. But my name is the same. My last name is the same in any language. And I said, hello, hey, excuse me. And they went, oh, you're here. And I went, yeah. I mean, it's like, I thought, you know, I had just been reborn. It was like a born-again Christian moment.
Mama.
I'm like, I have been saved. But, you know, as an entrepreneur, I left all the money with my wife to take care of the kids.
No, you got nothing.
You got to do these things, and that's kind of part of being an entrepreneur. I am so proud to meet you. I love the fact that you were a roofer, and now you're a fashionista, stylist, handbag maker. The company is called Hammett, Hammitt. What's the website?
Hammitt.com.
All right. Well, you keep up the good work. We're now going to go look for your product, because for those who don't know, it is very, very high quality. I'm looking at it. I'm staring at it right now. All I can say is,
and
I'm going to go.
Act now.
Yeah. I'm going to go buy my wife something right now.
That goes against all my principles, by the way. There is no offer.
Yeah, right.
No discount. Now you get a great bag.
You get nothing. All right. Hang with us. We're going to come back with more from this event. And Tony, great meeting you.
Great to meet you, Alan. Thank you very much.
All right. I'll be right back. Stay with us.
Discover unstoppable industry influencers who celebrate disruptive thinking and game-changing business strategies on Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
Well, today I've got an interesting story to tell, or at least Patrick Scott does. He is the older brother of Alex Scott, Alex's Lemonade Stand. Alex'sLemonade.org. They've raised over $150 million now. Because Alex only lived to about, what, 8 or 9 years old?
8 years old.
8 years old. And she was your little sister. Maybe you could tell the story.
Yep, absolutely. So Alex was my younger sister. At the age of 1, she was diagnosed with cancer, which started about 7 years of treatment. A few years into that, in 2000, she decided she was going to hold a lemonade stand in our front yard to raise money for cancer research, kind of the classic child entrepreneurial thing, but not to keep the money, to give it to her hospital to raise money for research. So we, you know, my parents probably thought she would raise $10, $20 like most lemonade stands. She ended up raising $2,000 the first day. And so it became an annual tradition.
Wait a minute, the first day?
First day, yeah. The local, we were in Connecticut at the time, and the local town paper got a hold of it. And so enough people came up to raise money to raise $2,000. So it became an annual tradition. We would do $2,000 the first year, similar the second year, up to $10,000 the year after that. And then Alex had the bold idea of telling the local news station that she was going to raise $1 million the following year.
And how old was she when that happened?
She was 7 when that happened. I guess you could say it's one of those things where setting a high goal turned into a self-fulfilling prophecy, because when you have a 7-year-old who has terminal cancer saying she's going to raise $1 million to try to cure cancer, and not just her cancer either. This was the thing at this point. She said she wanted to do research for other kinds of cancer as well. So she ended up on the Today Show, on Oprah, on all sorts of media, and ended up hitting the $1 million mark shortly before she passed away.
I remember this whole story. It was a beautiful story. And she was your little sister, the fact that she was just 1 year younger than you. So you literally have lived your life watching her give her life, you know, really to this disease, but also give meaning to her life by, you know, doing this great thing, Alex's Lemonade Stand. And now you have this organization. You're 23 years old, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
And you guys have raised this tremendous amount of money, and thank you for all that can't say thank you because I'm sitting here with you, but thank you, and thanks to Alex for her sacrifice and making her life, even though she was only 8 years old, worth something, you know, to the whole world in this special way, and you too for continuing it on, and your family.
Yeah, thank you. And I think, I guess to continue the story a little bit, after she passed away, other people started holding lemonade stands and sending it in. So naturally, we called it the Alex's Lemonade Stand Foundation if you wanted to donate to Alex's Lemonade Stand, which was now more than just a front yard lemonade stand. You could do that. And so then now, every year, still about 5,000 people will hold lemonade stands and send us the money, in addition to a number of other fundraisers we do. But doing that, we've managed to raise over $150 million.
Absolutely amazing. It's so funny because when I was a little kid, back in the early 60s, I was born in 1960. I remember I was probably 5 years old. I had a lemonade stand and a motorcycle cop pulls up and he gets off his motorcycle and I'm watching this and I got so scared that I ran in the house and my mom brought me back out and she says, "Is everything okay?" And he says, "Yeah, I just wanted to buy some lemonade." So it's, you know, that is kind of the beginnings for many little entrepreneurial children is a lemonade stand. And then I worked my way into a paper route. And so I've been an entrepreneur ever since I was a little kid. But I mean, I love this story because what you guys have done with it. And so maybe you could talk a little bit about what alexslemonade.org does.
We predominantly give out grants for research. So we funded about 800 research projects since we were founded, and that's pediatric cancer research, all types. What we really try to do is focus on the gaps in the research. So, for example, we noticed there weren't enough new PhDs and doctors going into pediatric cancer research. So we created a grant specifically for people who are at the very start of their career. The idea is if you can spend less money then and get greater return, because then they might spend the next 30 years of their life working on that problem. Another thing we do, which we started doing a few years ago, is we call it the Travel for Care program. So with a lot of types of pediatric cancer, they're very rare. And this goes back to how we can get the most impact for our money, which is really important to us. And a lot of times there'll be treatment in one city for a particular type of cancer. And health insurance might cover the cost of the treatment, but if you are a single mother and can't afford to, you know, take a week off of work to drive and stay in a hotel there, the treatment might as well not exist. So we pay for that as well. And then the more recent initiative we've started in the past year, we call it the Childhood Cancer Data Lab. We really wanted to fund a big data project, kind of in right now. And there wasn't a lot of action going on, so we decided to hire PhDs, developers, and data scientists in-house. And we've got a team in Philadelphia where we're based, and they are harmonizing genomic data sets from tissue samples.
Well, this is amazing. Again, if you want to donate, you can check it out at alexslemonade.org. Alexslemonade.org. This founding member, the brother of Alex, Patrick Scott, Patrick is 23 years old, and I'm just curious how this has affected your life, because obviously you're no normal 23-year-old.
Well, I think it's tough to say exactly how it's affected my life, because it's probably every single thing would be different if it weren't for this. One thing I think it's really given me is an appreciation for life, and I think this is what I hear from a lot of people, because we meet a lot of families who lose children or lose siblings, and it makes you realize that, you know, your time really does count for something and that you need to make the most of it. I think also the fact that my sister had started this organization by the time she was 8, and has a legacy that's now grown into $150 million, having died at eight. You know, it kind of makes you wonder, well, you know, what's your excuse? You know, you're never too young. It's never too early to start trying to work on something.
Fantastic. Do you have any aspirations in life of your own that you want to be a, you know, a, whatever it may be, an engineer, a doctor? You know, what is your path? Or is it Alex's lemonade stand?
Well, at the moment, this is the prominent thing I'm working on. I do this full time, as do my parents, as do 50 other people in our organization. But I think right now I really want to use this to make a positive impact. Eventually, maybe I'll find that through some sort of social entrepreneurship or through government or something else, there's a better opportunity to make an impact. But right now I'm really focused on the mission at hand, which is trying to cure childhood cancer.
It's awesome. And it's a noble one at that. All I can say is that, you know, you're meeting a person that lost a child to, you know, whatever it was that took our little baby that was, you know, not even born. Our baby was 7 months when passed in the womb. So, you know, people get affected by things in their life and have to live their whole lives with these things. You were a little boy. You had to endure a lot of pain as a child. Your parents endured a lot of pain as parents do. I'm a grandfather now as of this morning, 6 hours ago. So all this is very special. And that's why for me, you know, when they said, well, would you like to interview one of the family members from Alex's lemonade stand? And I thought, well, lemonade, yeah, I could use a glass of lemonade, but really this is a lot more than a lemonade stand, isn't it?
Yeah, it certainly is.
Patrick, we're here at Sweet World, and I'm just curious how, with all of these resources that you have at your fingertips, how do you manage those? I mean, obviously you must be doing something with NetSuite.
Yeah, so we are in the final stages of transitioning everything to NetSuite in our organization. And one thing that's always really important and top of mind as a nonprofit is what percent of your revenue is going towards programs. That's how a lot of people decide where to donate. And so the ability of NetSuite and our ability as an organization to track our administrative expenses is, I think, one of the things that sets us apart. And we think that NetSuite can help us maintain that standard and take it to a next level. Additionally, we've really, really been impressed with the reporting features on NetSuite. As a nonprofit, our resources are always fairly limited as in terms of our ability to fundraise and reach out and all those sorts of things. And if you can find the 20% of donors who are going to give you the 80% of return, then that's game changing.
Well, thank you very much once again, alexislemonade.org. And if you want to help somebody else, here's your chance. Pay it forward. I'm Alan Taylor. It is Entrepreneur Weekly. I wanna
hold them like they do in Texas. Stay tuned. There's more Entrepreneur Weekly after these messages. You're listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
Well, today, once again, we're at Oracle NetSuite's Sweet World Conference in Las Vegas. And joining us right now is Danny Korsch. He is from a luxury candy boutique brand called Sugarfina. You can find it at sugarfina.com. It's like the word sugar plus FINA.com. Very simple. I like sugar. I like candy. And maybe you could talk about the brand just a little bit.
Sure. Thanks, Alan. Sugarfina was started by our two founders, Josh Resnick and Rosie O'Neill, and they actually concepted the company on their third date. Josh took Rosie to see Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, the original version. And immediately afterwards, they started brainstorming concepts for a candy store for grown-ups. And they spent the next 6 months doing the very hard job of traveling all over the world, finding luxury candy makers, and really curating a grouping of candies that will bring something new to the U.S. market that they felt was missing. And 6 months later, we started online first, sugarfina.com, and the response was just overwhelming, really. We saw really strong sales, and the dream was always to open a retail store. So at the end of 2013, we opened our first retail store in Beverly Hills, and since then, we've opened 50 more. So it's been quite a journey for the brand.
Holy sugar, Batman. That's pretty wild. And by the way, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, one of my all-time favorite movies, period. So I get it. It was very inspiring to them. But wait a minute. If I do the math, we're like 5 years from start to 50 stores.
Yes. So we tripled in growth every year since the company started until last year. Last year, we only doubled. So it's been really rapid growth for us as a business, and we've sold a lot of candy. And I think the response has been so positive because we really don't have anybody doing what we're doing in this market. We're a luxury product. It's really beautiful. It's given as gifts to all sorts of different people, and we've developed a really strong omni-channel presence. So we have our online store where we started. We have retail stores all over the country, and we do really significant wholesale business all across the U.S. and internationally.
I am happy to say I have a little box of your product in my bathroom. From somebody gave me a gift, like a swag bag or something. And I'm like, hey, look at this. It looks good. Sugarfina, a luxury candy boutique. And I'm sorry. It's sad. You only doubled last year. I mean, what are you going to do about that? You got to pick up the game again.
We're excited. You know, obviously we can't continue doubling, but we have really ambitious growth plans. This year is the year of international growth, and it's been a big focus for us. We haven't opened any Sugarfina stores internationally, but that is coming very soon. And then the other focus for us is technology. So we've really invested quite a few resources into our website, launching new products and features. We launched Candygram earlier this year, and the response has been really, really positive. And we have some other exciting developments on the e-commerce front coming up as well.
I just think this is brilliant. And when I heard the story about how you guys, I mean, literally 50 stores, even if you gave a group of people a job to open 50, you know, luxury candy boutiques, it would take 4 or 5 years to do that all by itself. So hats off to your team. And you said something to the effect of you're like one of the first employees?
Mm-hmm. So I'm actually the second employee at the company. When I started, it was just Josh and Rosie, and then we had a woman who was doing order fulfillment for us. And my first task when I arrived on the first day in their basement was to assemble my desk and start from there. So I've really seen it go from the very, very beginning to where we are today. And now we're over 500 employees. We have 50 locations. It's been a really remarkable journey for me to be a part of.
What an awesome story from the basement. So many of these stories. If you even look at Amazon, there's pictures on the web of Bezos sitting in his living room at his desk. And that is the spirit of an entrepreneur. I would love to know, just give me 30 seconds window into these two people that started this company. Because the Willy Wonka and the chocolate, come on, it's my life, right? I love this.
Yeah, Josh and Rosie are incredible. They're really inspirational founders, and they're intimately involved in the day-to-day running of the business, even today. They work harder than anybody else. They come from really interesting backgrounds, and Josh was in video game production and started his own video game production firm and sold that to Electronic Arts. And Rosie was doing marketing at Mattel for the whole Barbie division, so she's a product creative marketing branding genius, and Josh knows how to run and scale a business. So they're kind of this amazing power couple, and they like to say they have their three vices. She was in toys, he was in games, and now they're in candy. So it's been a fun team to be a part of.
I love it. Sugarfina is the company, sugarfina.com, a luxury candy boutique. And when I go home, I've been holding out on even opening this little square box, little clear box with some little marshmallow looking candies in there. And so I was intrigued, and I've probably had them for a month now. I hope they're not going bad. But anyway, I know a guy. So we're going to take a little break. We'll come back and find out what Sugarfina is doing at Oracle NetSuite's Sweet World. It is Entrepreneur Weekly. I used to rule the world. Seas would rise when I gave the word. Now in the morning I
discover unstoppable industry influencers who celebrate disruptive thinking and game-changing business strategies on Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
Yes, and today I'm in Las Vegas at Sweet World. It is put on by Oracle's NetSuite. And we had a lot of great interviews while we were at this event, and I'm saying that because I've taped these interviews and they're now playing for you on the radio, and you can hear more of them on our website at entrepreneur.com. Also, don't forget, pick up an issue of Entrepreneur Magazine. On the cover is my friend Richard Rawlings from Fast and Loud on Discovery Channel, Gas Monkey Garage. The story there is quite amazing too. Anyway, joining us right now from Sugarfina is Danny Korsh. He says, say it like Porsche, because he knows I'm a car guy. Danny Korsh is here. And so let's talk about Sweet World. I mean, what candy companies and growth and scaling, and you got to have some high power computing stuff and have to have the knowledge. And maybe that's what you're here for. Maybe you could just give us a window.
Yeah, so we've been on NetSuite for 4 years now, and it's been an instrumental part of our growth. I like to say that we were a small company with big company problems. We have four different distinct channels of business. We have a retail presence, online, wholesale distribution, and we do all of our own co-manufacturing. So we had all these challenging problems to solve, and we were still a very small company at the time. And what NetSuite has enabled us to do is really scale the business and move into areas that we otherwise wouldn't be able to take part in because of our IT infrastructure underneath. So really, I like coming to Suite World, one, to meet new customers. It's always great to network with other people and see how they've solved the same problems that we either are currently solving or will anticipate solving in the future. And then it's always great to get a pulse on what the upcoming developments are for the platform itself and kind of where the product is headed, especially with the Oracle acquisition and how that's enhanced their R&D capabilities and where they're headed as a company.
It's interesting. Neither one of us are being paid to talk about this company. I was invited to come out to this and I thought, I better go look at that because our world continues to evolve and it's evolving at a high speed. And if you don't keep up with it, you're going to get left behind. And so when you talk about, you know, NetSuite and all of this, what is it that you like about what that products do for you, what the products do for your company?
I'm a NetSuite geek. I'm really passionate about NetSuite. I think it's a really amazing tool. And the reason I think that is we didn't have anybody on our team with any coding background or IT experience to speak of.
Well, I mean, you were employee number two, and it sounds like a lady was putting candy in bags, so it's like it was on your shoulders.
So even a team with limited resources could still take a product like NetSuite and get to value really quickly. And what I love about NetSuite is it's highly customizable, but you don't have to customize it. So it's a great canvas, and they give you a lot of great tools. And then it's your job as a business stakeholder to think about how you can use those tools most effectively. And what I've found so far is that NetSuite has all the tools we need to get the job done. And it's given us one single source of infrastructure to rely upon when we're continuing to scale the company.
And 50 stores. I mean, so what NetSuite offers is expandable to continue growing in a global marketplace like you're talking about?
Absolutely. I mean, we use a fraction of what NetSuite offers as a, you know, we're a consumer packaged good company, but they do service industry, they do nonprofit, they have all these different verticals. And what we've been able to do is add modules to our solution as the companies continue to get larger and larger. And I don't see that really being a hindrance in the future. They continue to develop and keep pace with everything that they're doing, which enables us to keep pace with the growth that we've seen.
It's amazing. Maybe just because my mouth is watering just a tiny bit about the kind of candies you guys make. I don't know why, but I feel like that their Sugarfina is like a sugarless brand or something. So there's obviously maybe in my mind some confusion, but you don't even make any sugarless candy. That'd be one of the ingredients is missing in that case.
The key ingredient is missing in that case. No sugar-free candies. What is really special about Sugarfina is as we've gotten so much larger, we work with these amazing candy makers all over the world. And as we got larger, we've been able to tell them, okay, we want a candy in this shape, this color, this texture, this flavor, and they'll do the R&D work, and we get to really be the Willy Wonka in this equation and taste the candy. And we've launched amazing product collaborations with Tito's Vodka, Casamigos Tequila. We just launched a Corona Light Gummy and a little lime. So we've been able to really play candy maker without knowing how to make candy, which has been really fun.
See what happens? You make a great movie, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, and now comes Sugarfina. It was born. It's the child of Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. And here we have now 50 stores. No, they're luxury candy boutiques. You can find them online also at sugarfina.com. Danny Korsch, thank you, man. Congratulations on all the success. Please extend that to the owners and tell them I love the movie too.
Will do. Thanks, Alan.
All right, that's it for my time here at Suite World. Thanks to the folks at Oracle and NetSuite and a great team of PR people that put a lot of fun interviews together for me. Hope you guys have enjoyed it. If you have, there's a whole lot more from Suite World at our website, entrepreneur.com. See you next week.
This program is copyrighted by Entrepreneur Media Incorporated.